Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cybersecurity Matters. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Dominic Vogel. Dominic, who do we have in the virtual hot seat for this episode?
This week, we have Scott Madsen. He's the CEO of Single Solutions. He's based in Utah. I don't think I've ever spoken with anyone from Utah before. So I think it's going to be a really fun convo.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So we will bring Scott in, and we will be right back. Scott, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Awesome. So I read a little bit about you, and the one thing that stood out to me is that you are golf averse, and that's a man after my own heart. Because although I love golf courses, I'm terrible at golfing, so I just don't do it. So we have that.
Yeah, I always joke with people. I say I like old cars, and I'll go to the racetrack with them anytime, but I can only suck at so many things at once. I can't add golf to that list. It's already a crowded list.
Awesome. So tell us your story. How did you get into the cybersecurity business? What's your background?
So my background, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a partner with three of my brothers, which is super weird for a lot of people, but it's something that we've been in investment together for 20 years now, worked together basically our whole lives. And so we started a tech firm where we mostly did web design and some just regular managed IT type work, MSP type work. In 2012, we ended up getting a client who was in financial services, and they had just a totally different threat landscape than anything that we'd ever dealt with. We went out and tried to find a solution for them, somebody that we could partner with or somebody that could kind of add some depth to what our current offering was, and there was just no one out there who could meet the regulatory standard that they were required to hit. And so it kind of put us on the spot where we had to get a lot more involved in trying to find solutions that dealt with a high threat level regulatory landscape. And that's where our entry into cybersecurity happened. We've always been more kind of on the compliance side, but through the years of managing doing work for financial institutions, we now do work for pharmaceutical companies. We do work for DOD registered subcontractors, anybody in professional services, just people who have really high value data. That's kind of what our solution ends up protecting. So, mm-hmm.
It sounds like you come from a family of business people and entrepreneurs, so you seem to have that in your blood.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes, we do.
That's very cool. Very, very unique in a lot of ways.
Scott, yeah. I'd love to pick your brain on this in terms of both the compliance landscape and the threat landscape. What does that look like in your mind? And is that going to change as the result of what we're seeing right now with the coronavirus?
Yeah, I think everything's going to change, and already has. I think the coronavirus is its own problem. But you have California passed the California Consumer Privacy Act in 2018, and it was enforceable in January of 2020. People were supposed to start to comply, and it's enforceable in July 1st. They may extend that. There's actually a bill out there where someone's they're trying to get the state to extend the time frame for enforcement. But basically, it's an extraordinarily rigid set of protection requirements that companies have to undertake in modifying. And there's kind of a two-stage portion to it. They have to have legal come in and modify their policies and procedures to deal with the regulatory requirements. And then they also have to engage a IT company, and it's got to be a cybersecurity company. No one else is going to be able to understand how to deploy the solution. But they have to engage either training with their current staff or hiring a company like ours in order to meet the regulatory requirement. You have the similar laws on the books right now, and it's in the state senate for Washington State. You've got New York has a CISO law. I think that this is going to beyond just the standard compliance stuff. I think that data privacy is going to become its own compliance nightmare that I think we're all just going to have to adapt to and deal with. Luckily, there are companies like ours. There's a few other companies that deal with the intersection of compliance and cybersecurity. But unless you have somebody who's used to dealing with that framework, it's going to be pretty difficult for people to make that adaptation.
When we're talking about compliance and we're talking about data privacy, and it's like you're saying, it's a very rapidly changing landscape, and it's just going to become more and more rigid. Now, part of the problem, though, is that it's so fragmented. Like you mentioned there, at least in the States, you have something in California, then you have something at Washington State, and different states have slightly different data privacy regulations. Is that splintering making things more difficult in order to achieve compliance, or is it making things easier?
It's going to be more difficult for a while. For instance, in financial services, most regulators are state regulators, and every state has a different regulation standard or regulatory standard. We serve financial institutions in, I think, 10 different states, so we have to meet the different regulatory standard for 10 different states. With the CCPA, I think that it's kind of a landmark. What I imagine is going to happen is that the CCPA is going to start to enforce. A company is going to say, we're going to challenge this enforcement, or they're going to sue the state. It's going to go to the Supreme Court. They're going to have to make a decision. But I think that overall, California is going to kind of create kind of a black eye for the federal government because they haven't taken the precautionary measures to make sure that people are securing each other's people's data. So I think it's going to kind of be a domino effect where we're going to actually have some legislation come down federally. I think it's going to get to the point where that's necessary. And honestly, it's been necessary for a really long time. This is something that's been happening for years and years and years. And we've just, unfortunately, as a society, it's something we're so uninformed about and undereducated on the threats and the risks that are out there, that just getting people up to where they can converse on, about what the threats are with their company, how they need to address training for employees, things that are as simple as just like what's an everyday etiquette for an employee dealing with phishing emails or spear phishing emails. It's something we really have to do a better job of training our people and adapting to.
Absolutely.
So Scott, getting into the nitty gritty, I mean, the laws are there for a reason, and it's so encouraging to see the progression here. What would you say are the top one or two threats that you're seeing out there and you're seeing with your clients that you're helping them with?
So most threats that are actually successful happen because of employee error. It's just a fact. I mean, we deploy a solution that's really broad. We're probably have one of the most broad, solutions in the industry right now. We cover literally, Cingo is a Latin word for surround and protect. And that's the attitude that we take toward looking at cybersecurity. We don't just do your endpoint security. We don't just do your network. We do every single part of your business and try to get integrated into every part of your business that's necessary. Mm-hmm. And so employees are the big high risk area. And so one thing that we do is we offer a training program that's just a part of our service, where we teach employees about how to recognize risks, about spear phishing and phishing emails, about how to recognize them, and then we send them kind of dummy emails to see if they fall for it. And the people who fall for it need additional training, but we try to make sure that there's something in place that's doing kind of residual or long-term training for employees. The rest of it, I just think it's getting cheaper and cheaper to try and hack people. As a hacker, I think the net benefits are getting so great that a lot more people are looking at it. Last year in 2019, for the first time in organized crime, cyber theft actually revenued more than drug trafficking and human trafficking, which is just astonishing. And so it's something that we kind of have to take a deeper look, because these aren't just people trying to get a credit card number here and there. This is institutionalized crime that we have to really start taking a lot more seriously. And I think, for instance, right now, with people working remotely with the coronavirus, it's created kind of a really interesting dynamic where you have people who typically are working in a secure environment. Most companies pay for pen testing. They're taking the precautionary measures. But the minute they send somebody home, even if they're working on a secure VPN, they're still working on a network that you've never done pen testing on. You have no idea, unfortunately, and it's mostly, when I go to my friend's house and I have to get on their Wi-Fi, I ask them what the Wi-Fi password is, and they're like, oh, it's written on the back of the modem. That shouldn't be a thing. You should always change your passwords. You should not just use factory settings for anything. And I think that it's putting us in a really interesting position. There was an Inc. article that came out this morning about how it's kind of created a bit of a milieu for cyber crime to go after people who are working at home who just don't know any better. And yes. I think right now, there's this old saying that says, when the rabbit starts a crying, the fox comes a running, but not to help. Mm-hmm. And I think that I think that right now we're in a really interesting moment where people really need to get educated, and they really need to make sure that their staff is understanding how to work at home, how to work remotely, and how that etiquette should be handled.
Yeah, we need to talk to who's in charge of the hen houses, and hopefully it's not a fox.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And for companies who are prepared for stuff like this, for us, Singo Solutions is what we undergo a third-party certification every year called the SOC 2.
SOC
2. Yep. And it's supported by the AICPA. And what it does, it goes in and it just says these guys have the highest level of professional standards possible. And we have to run through contingency training. And so one of the things that we do is disaster recovery training. Mm-hmm. And so when this all went into effect, you know, if you have the plan in place, it took us about 10 minutes per employee to get people set up at home in a very secure environment so that they could do the work remotely. But if you don't have anything in place and you haven't gone through the security training for the contingencies, then it really is, it kind of becomes a free for all. So. Mm-hmm.
How about ransomware? Are you seeing a lot of cases?
Unfortunately, we do still see quite a few cases. We end up getting referred to. These are usually people who we take on who are in the midst of an issue like that. It's out there. It's still a massive problem. I think that as things kind of destabilize a little bit more in the market, that people are looking, that the high value stuff isn't necessarily just social security numbers or you know, the standard credit card numbers, things like that. They're looking for intellectual property. They're looking for stuff that is full of, that is, you know, R&D that's completed. I think that as trade continues to get, you know, be a little bit not as stable as it has been, a lot of other countries are looking at trying to isolate and identify as much IP as possible before they end up, you know, trade ends up getting shut down completely and for different areas of the world. God forbid that happens, but if it does, I think that we're seeing a huge uptick in people trying to take over, especially manufacturing facilities, in a way that we haven't before. People who haven't typically been targeted, who have intellectual property, are now engineering firms. I mean, we're seeing quite a bit of an uptick in threats that way.
Yeah, the interesting thing is the intellectual property might not be valuable for resale, like in the case of these manufacturing companies, but it's valuable to the organizations that are being targeted, and they're looking for that quick hit and those deep pockets to get as much as they can in that window of time.
Right. Right. And you look at technology that's being produced. I mean, you've got some of this stuff, you've got billions of dollars into technology and into pharmaceutical development. And all it takes is one bad hit, and someone else is just gained access to, you know, billions in investment almost overnight. So I do think it's something that we as a country need to just get a little bit sharper at. I really appreciate what you guys do, because I think that the more people that we can get just a basic understanding of the way that this works, I think tech is a great industry to be in, but we've done ourselves a disservice by kind of trying to create it. Like we act like it's almost like black magic. Like people say, how does that work? And it's like, oh, you couldn't understand it. You'd never get it, you know? And I can go into my accountant and who's dealing with, you know, difficult tax problems. And I say, how does this work? He has to break it down for me. He doesn't have the excuse of saying I'm much smarter than you. You're not going to understand it.
That's his job.
And I think
that
it's his job, and it's our job too. And I think that that's what we've done. We've created this weird mystique around tech where people don't feel like they can communicate. Executives don't feel like they can make informed decisions. They just want it out of their way because they don't think they can understand it. And we have to do a much better job of helping them to understand the vernacular, helping them understand the way that we communicate, and learning how to bridge that gap, so that they can wrap their arms around the fact that this is a threat. There are ways to deal with it. We have to take precautionary measures, but it's just like any investment. You're going to see return on your investment. You're going to see a better scenario result, but nobody's going to make those financial commitments unless they've got, unless they can actually understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm. That's so true, Scott. That's really well said. I think it's one of the finer ways we've actually heard it. And you know, that whole notion as well about that mystique or aura around things. I think that's given rise, especially with small and mid-sized businesses, where they blindly trust their IT guy or their IT managed service provider. And if you ask them, you know, who's handling cybersecurity? How's cyber risk handled? They're like, oh, that IT owns that. IT's dealing with that. what are some ways that we can start breaking down those barriers or breaking down those perceptions?
Well, I think the first thing is that we have to train our staff to not speak. I mean, it's as simple as using acronyms. Why on earth, you know, when you look at it, when we say www, that's a 9-syllable way to say World Wide Web, which is 3 syllables. Why do we do these things to ourselves? It doesn't make any sense. But we do it because we like people to be lost in translation. We like to be the authority. And for us,
we want to sound smart.
One thing we reinforce here a lot is, especially with our people, is these people who own businesses, who run businesses, who are making these discretionary decisions every day, for you to treat them like they're an idiot is a massive mistake. They're smart. They are where they are because they've earned it. Yes. You are where you are because you've earned it, but you've got to communicate with these people. And I think that trying to break things down to their most basic fundamental root where communication can happen, then people I think can get a higher level of trust. We had a client actually referred to us a little while ago who they had a managed service provider who was doing their IT work, and somebody in the company asked, who's doing the cyber? They said our MSP is doing it. So they ended up calling us because they had a computer that was acting up, and we got there and we said, how long has it been doing this? So like 45 days. There were 3 viruses on that computer, and it was an accounting firm that was just pulling data all day, every day. And they'd had a ticket into the MSP for 46 days, wow. Hadn't been dealt with. And it's just a different mentality. When you work in cybersecurity, when that is your highest function, mm-hmm. you have to be responsive, because every second that threat exists, they're pulling data. Every second that threat exists means they're getting deeper into the company and they're at greater risk. And it's kind of, again, it's an education thing to say, not all MSPs do cyber, and not all cyber companies actually do the managed services like Singo does. But trying to help people understand, and again, through informative platforms like Cybersecurity Matters and people who do what you do, I love doing these interviews because the reach that it has are for business owners who are so tired of hearing from their IT guy stuff that doesn't make any sense that they're downloading podcasts to say, do these guys make, can I at least figure this out? And again, if we can communicate, then executives are armed with what they need to go out and make decisions on a budgetary framework, instead of us saying, it's gobbledygook, you're not going to get it, just throw money at me and I'll fix it, and you still end up having problems.
Scott, and thank you for giving us a shout out from a platform perspective. We really appreciate that. I agree with you. It's so important to just be able to get good content out there for people, for business people to understand, like you were saying there, on their terms, in their words. Yep. The last thing we need is more tech talk. And one last question, at least that I have for you, is again on that same perception piece. Is that whole notion as well that, again, I don't know, you're not necessarily an insurance expert, but there's still that perception of, oh, yep. Cybersecurity, I can just insure that and never have to worry about that. Again, is it a similar answer to the previous question? Is this just a matter of better educating and better informing business leaders?
Yeah, so we actually run a program where we work directly with cyber risk policy providers, and that's something that we've kind of pursued because, again, they're in the same boat that we are. If your client can understand the risk that they're facing, then they can make informed decisions. It's when insurance agents are trying to upsell cyber risk policies, and the people don't understand what they're facing, it's impossible. We have the same problem because, again, it's an understanding thing. But there are ways to make sure that even with us, if you deploy our entire framework, our entire infrastructure into your company, there are still risks that we can't guarantee against. There is technology that no one's seen. No one can guarantee, yes, we know all of the technology that's on the World Wide Web, and we know all the threats, and we've dealt with them all. There's no way to do that. And so where there is an overflow of or a gap in risk coverage, then that's when you bring in an informed insurance provider who can look at the cyber risk policy, say, here are the things that you're dealing with actively, here are the things that we need to be aware of passively that may not be covered, and that's how you can kind of identify and dial in your coverage. The big problem is people go and buy these kind of broad policies, and then they actually end up don't covering really specific applications like ransomware or, you know, an employee theft kind of situation. They would look at that and say that terminates the policy.
Yeah, I think that the mistakes that are made is that they start with risk transfer instead of starting with identifying the risks and then reducing the risks. So that's a big thing. And another thing is that there are certain cyber risks that insurance cannot actually cover. So therefore, there's no way to say that everything is covered.
No, there's not. And I think that a lot of this stuff is just, you know, a way that I kind of, it's kind of a dumb analogy, but it works in the Pacific Northwest because it happens up there. But it's what we usually say is if you're getting chased by a bear, you don't have to be faster than the bear. You just got to be faster than the guy next to you.
The low-hanging fruit.
In cybersecurity, that's it. In cybersecurity, it's the exact same way. Why would someone attack a company over and over and over again if they have a proven, like, strategic deployment of a security solution instead of just moving on to somebody else? And that's the way that people have to look at it. Of course, there's no way that anyone, and if they can, if there's a company out there and you bought something from them that says, I guarantee that you're never going to have a cybersecurity event, I got a bridge to sell you. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. But at the end of the day, what we can do is make sure that we're deploying, again, a really high solution that takes into account not just a fragmented approach to your company. We're saying we're going to make sure your network is good, and then you got to hire another company to do your endpoint, or, you know, and you know, you can go on and on from there. What you need to look at is a copacetic, fully integrated solution that's going to help your company meet the threats that you're going to be dealing with. And I think that for us, the way that we've done that is this compliance mandate has been really interesting for our research and development, because for us, once we've developed our solution up to the point where it meets a really high regulatory standard, we just offer that same solution to everybody downstream, because it costs the same for us to manage it at that point. And so I think that if more companies were taking more of an integrated approach to this, then you'd have a lot broader coverage for companies that are dealing with how to identify, I guess, the scope of the problem. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it's something where a lot of managed service providers who are great break fix type guys, they get involved in this, and companies end up signing contracts thinking that they have coverage. And most MSPs, they won't touch it, because it's, again, it's really technical, difficult work. So
yeah, it's like that false sense of security. It almost, it's like, yeah, you think you're covered for everything, but when in fact there's a whole lot of opportunity for maturity in that insurance connection.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. And Scott, thank you again so much for such an awesome discussion. I think we could easily have a 3-hour discussion with you.
There were so many threads.
We'll definitely have you again.
Do it again, guys. This was fun.
Thank you again.
Let's be well again.
And be safe.
Talk to you soon, Scott.
You too. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Christian and I will be right back momentarily to wrap things up on the show.
Dominic, what a fantastic conversation with Scott. He was such a pleasant surprise for me. I don't know, how did you find that conversation?
He was just such an engaging speaker. You know, he gave really well thought out answers. I really liked how he really explained about the whole notion about compliance and regulatory landscape, how that's changing, and how businesses, both big and small, need to pay attention. I think he did a fantastic job.
Yeah, agreed. And he has his eye on what's happening in the horizon of the regulatory space. For me, we talked so much about the issue of IT and that IT does not necessarily equal cybersecurity. Yeah. Having said that, I think we may have found a wonderful bridge with Scott. He marries those two concepts so well. He's so aware of that gap, and I think he's doing his best to fill that gap. So
absolutely.
Very excited to continue the conversation with him in the future. Thanks for watching. You can view our podcast on Cybersecurity Matters playlist on the Conversations That Matters YouTube channel, or listen to us anywhere you normally listen to your podcasts. And we will see you next week.